So where does the awe come from? The feeling that just fills us suddenly. Like what I can't imagine what you felt when everything went dark and the temperature went down.
Yeah, I could finally pee outside.
So nobody can see. And then you heard a little creature go, "Hey."
Hey.
That wasn't my idea of an eclipse moment.
The capacity to attend to could be imaged as like a, since we're on the topic, you know, a telescope needs to be pointed grossly and then fine-tuned so that the object, the image, right, is brought into view through the multiple layers and filters of the lenses so that you can attend to, right? All right, so in that same way, here's the so-called presence of experience, which includes the, you know, comes with capacity of attending to. If your thoughts are bothering you, you're attending to, right? There is attention given to, one is attending to the content, the flow, the implication of the stories told by thoughts. And that can have a pleasant or unpleasant somatic effect. Without the being able to focus and bring the object into view, then your capacity to attend to is at ease. So the yoga, whether it's the Vipassana or other things that are possible, is the capacity or realization or practice, if you want to use that word, of completely releasing the capacity to attend to.
Not making it your will where your focus is, just letting it come to you. Is that what you mean?
I think that's a nice on-ramp. Let it come to you. And clearly everything is happy to come to you in the way that it does. Now, we can get, let's say, become vigilantes when it comes to what is occurring to the capacity to attend. So now we're content focused. We're content inebriated. And so then we want to manipulate what we think is bothering us, which is content. But that's not true. Because content is just flowing through of its own nature and accord. And then the attention or the meaning that you give to the stream of content is also flowing through of its own accord. You're not choosing deliberately or premeditatively how you're going to apply your meaning-making machine to the flowing through of content, sensation, thought, and association. We would like to imagine that I can take credit for how I'm thinking and feeling about things, because after all, I'm the one that's thinking and feeling them, so therefore I must also be responsible or even eligible to choose and decide. But you're not eligible to choose and decide, because the streaming of sensation and content and imagination and stories told are just, you know, bobbing on the surface. Well, what happens is we will let's say, inoculate this otherwise without not meaning less in a disparaging way, but without meaning bobbing flow of content and sensation, if you don't try to focus, bring it into focus, and then create a story of like or dislike or strategy associated with it, then you're not simply relaxing from the content, but more importantly, you're relaxing from the capacity to attend. If I'm stuck on content, then I can either be made joyful, non-joyful, or neutral, to keep it kind of simple, about the content. Most content in a day we don't pay that much attention to. I mean, most all of the content in a day, or in whatever so-called length of time you choose, we don't pay that much attention to, really.
Well, there's usually like automatic reactions to content. You know, like you meet somebody, you have an automatic like them, don't like them, or just hardly registers. Or you are going to have lunch and you're looking at what's available, and you even have a reaction to the content that comes
yes.
to your head.
Yes.
Lunch.
Right. So all phenomena, regardless, let's say, of its intensity, is capable of triggering or elucidating a response, a reaction, right? A value proposition. So that's content. All of that is content. Whether one wants to emphasize the involuntary nature of it, or the apparent I chose nature of it, it's still content. So the myth of being a person, a body, a creature of a certain race, color, gender, socioeconomic class, education, etc., etc. See, all of those are like bling, that's jewelry. That occurs, you know, as fantasy. And the structure that you could say we've created or has been created for us, that doesn't matter who you want to hold accountable. Whatever the structure is of self, self-perception, self-imagination, right? Your beliefs, superstitions, how you roll, whether you like little boxes or whether you discard them with aplomb, right, is just, it's not really made of anything, right? Your sense of your persona, the reliability of yourself, whether you're a go-to person or an absolute discardable jackass, is not your doing. But that's what we oftentimes want to fix or correct. Is the image of my image.
That's a never-ending endeavor.
Yes.
Never-ending.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
Keep you busy the rest
twice
of your
removed,
life.
Image of an image.
It's an image of an image held by an image of an image about an image that's imaginarily imaging itself. There's no end to how deeply imaginary the involuntary movement of, call it consciousness as imagery, is. But you can see, you can get a sense of it by virtue of how strong your association is with the image of yourself.
Oh, yeah. I don't often remember dreams, but I had a dream. It was midday and warm. It suddenly went pitch black and cold. It was the day after the eclipse.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, shit. I should at least had a light. I wasn't expecting this, you know. And then I forget what happened after that, but it was visceral.
Yeah,
I could feel it. And then there was this fear element, and then a smile because it's like, oh, this is made up.
Ah,
but I made up feeling cold. and being fearful.
Well, who's to say whether...
That's right. The eye is a little thick. That's
yeah.
The image,
yeah.
The image of myself.
Okay. So it's image. It's an image of an image of an image image.
The image of myself imagines.
Yeah.
It imagines.
Yeah. Right. Right.
It imagines itself.
Yeah. You're knee deep in involuntary imaging. And then you extract from that, oh, I exist in the dubious way that I exist, or in the firm, reliable way that I exist. Mm. And now that I exist, next stop on that train is pride.
Pride.
You know? And those stations are so close, you can walk. You don't even need to ride the train. Between I exist and pride, you may as well walk. You don't need the train. And look what the pride is about. Imagery.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A lot of heat, right, gets generated in one's experience or one's soul. On account of the streaming nature of imagery. Content, right? All of this is content. Okay. Back to where I was, you know, playing with a little earlier. Drop. Don't do anything. Just, we're playing with it. Don't bother to drop content. It won't work. Or if it does, it'll just be kind of brief. So there might be some utility in the lapse of content, even though it may be brief. But there's a more challenging realm than that. Drop your capacity to attend.
Would that take effort?
No.
Okay. I could.
No. Can't. No.
That attends is some kind of effort, but dropping it is really freeing yourself from that effort.
Yes.
Gotcha.
Yeah, and the capacity to attend, we could agree, is kind of a. Yes, effort, but. Not much, because it just does itself, right? It's doing itself, the capacity to attend, and then by virtue of exercising the capacity to attend, guess what? Now there's objects to attend to. Who created the objects? Well, right, the nature of imagery. You didn't create them. It's like the marriage between the capacity to attend and that which could possibly be attended to, which is otherwise just streaming imagery, creates the object.
You telling me the world goes away when you stop attending?
What happens to the world at night when sleeping?
Yeah, it goes away pretty solidly. Periods of time.
Okay.
I got this image of it, which does happen in dreams of time. You're trying vigorously to steer this thing. And then at some point you just let go of the wheel and it just goes where it goes.
It always is going just where it goes.
That's what I was imagining in this.
Yeah.
It's still doing and going, but it's not
by you. It never has been.
You're grabbing the wheel tighter and hitting the brake and the gas.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
Especially in dreams.
Well, those dreams are instructive in that way. What we might fail to see or be unwilling to consider is that in the waking state, now that the capacity to attend to is now on an object frenzy, right? It's an object frenzy. Well, it's the start of the day. I mean, I got to leave the house by da-da-da-da-da, and I got a clean shirt, or maybe I don't, and what clients do I need to see today, and right? I'm planning for so-and-so's birthday, and do I have a dentist appointment in a week from now? And, you know, 1,000 other things, which are not even appointment-based. They're just identity-based. Who do I love, and who do I hate, and why hasn't this person called me, and I wish that person hadn't? So it's like instantaneously, the capacity to attend, which was somewhat sanguine during sleep, yeah, is now like, heavy lifting. And then in pours objects, which are just, not really any objects. There's just the profundity of imagery, you could say, striking the capacity to attend. And then the meaning that's given, that creates the object. If there's no meaning, you know, which includes assigning symbology as language. I mean, is it green before you call it green? I mean, you're the wrong person to ask. Yeah, I'm sorry, yeah. I mean, is it anything before you call it that thing? You're just in a field of incomprehensibility. And so the capacity to attend goes object hunting, object creating. And that includes sentiment and body and physicality and sensation and spiritual experiences and everything you could possibly imagine. It just all occurs like whoosh, instant on. So there are some, you know, schools which try to school you in how to, can we say, micromanage the way that you think and feel about things through meditation and mono diets and, you know, good drugs and shitty teachers and stuff like that. And you're like, oh man, it's like, chill, man. It's too much. You see, it's all too much. You know, like you go to the Hindu temple and there's 30 gods, and in front of each of the little temples inside the giant temple with the god of that temple, there's a sign that says, do not go beyond here, all priests only. Like, you can walk only so far, but past the threshold into the actual, you know, sepulcher, is that, would that be the right word, where the clay deity outfitted in garish clothing is, only the priest can go there. And then in front of all of the little temples is a safe, like a home safe, about so big. Right on the floor in front of all the temples is a safe, and they drilled a slot in the top of the safe and then put little protective things around it, and you put money into the safe because that's the safe for that deity, and if you give money to that deity, then you get what that deity has to offer you. So the whole temple is filled like with safes for people that are putting cash for the deity. And you're like, it's a little too much religion here. Just a little bit too much religion here. But it's very expensive to maintain a facility of that size.
Yeah, I don't
security, cameras, sound systems, depreciation, you know, the maintenance shed. You know, this was a 30 acre or more, you know, facility with
safe bet.
So if you don't put money into those safes, you know, the rats are going to take over.
That's right. Don't blot out the sun on such and such a day.
But it's funny how, you know, the so-called human capacity for imagery, human capacity for attending, and human capacity for object creation will also create, right, these citadels of worship. You're like, what are you worshiping exactly? More imagery. Right? And for the privilege of worshiping more imagery, you can put cold hard cash in a safe and feel better about your life until you come to the temple next week.
Well, they can expand our imagery, you know, going to such places.
And they
wow,
do.
Wow, look at all this.
Yeah, that's right. As if we don't have enough. But yeah, I mean, some of us are insatiable for, you know, imagery and experiencing. So if you really roll it back, and you know, this is not the yoga that's typically, right, typically taught. I'm not making we, us, me or anything special in any way. Behind the intoxicating mirage of imagery and objects and pride of existence is what? Well, nothing at all. How can you discover palpably that nothing at all? Well, you have to wean yourself from the intoxication and misery of objects and imagery and implication. Now, behind those is your capacity to attend. Because none of those have existence, if you will, if not for the capacity to attend. So one's freedom is not measured by, well, I'm in good health, my relationship's, you know, on an up curve this month, and, right, there's money in the bank, and I have vacation plans. So, fuck you, I'm okay. You know? If your happiness is measured by, right, appointments, content, calendars, sensation, emotion, you know, measurable fulfillment, you're in deep trouble because all of those are going to go south.
And then if you measure your misery by...
Same.
By the opposite of that, you can make yourself miserable for no good reason.
And all of this emotion that we feel, we being whatever we think we are, it is appearing in, I'll just call it the set, the superset, the realm of objects, content. Now, it's really hard if you're not feeling so great to not be interested in feeling better. Right? It's difficult. So many lives are run by I need to, I wish to, I deserve to, I insist on feeling better about whatever. If the motivation is to feel better about whatever it is that you want to feel better about, and even that is completely unpredictable and you have no control over it. Whether you don't feel great, whether you want to feel great, whether you're successful at feeling better or unsuccessful at feeling better, doesn't even matter because you're just going to reset anyway. I mean, here you are, so-called in the present moment of the imagination of your life, and what the hell did you ever do? What the fuck did you ever do? Grow old? Okay. Starting to grow old? Okay. Just on the precipice, and you're not doing that either. You don't do that. So it's like you've never done a thing. Not a thing. Not to help someone, not to hurt someone, not to get a leg up, not to contribute to the betterment of humankind. Nothing. Acts have been performed, but you never did a thing. Just like now, you're not doing anything now. Not a damn thing. If you get behind the miraculous capacity to attend.
So capacity to attend sounds a little smidgen different than inclination to attend. And I'm taking inclination to attend. I would think of that first normally. But capacity almost seems like there's no choice. You don't have the capacity to attend. Something basic changes. So it's no longer an inclination. It's like sort of a reduction of that capacity.
Your discovery to make. Yeah. And it's hard to send a postcard back from the other the other side of the event horizon.
Yeah, who's there to get it?
Right? Yeah, because all we can do is from the, call it the bright side of the event horizon, not the singularity, but from the plurality side of the event horizon, well, we can send postcards to everybody. And we do. It's mass mailing all the time. But on the singularity side of the event horizon, I mean, good luck addressing it. And on the singularity side of the event horizon is you free from the capacity to attend. And here it is. The singularity side of the event horizon and the plurality side of the event horizon are not two different places or spaces or conditions. They're one and the same. So it's not like you are relieved or even need to be relieved of the mess of the plurality of consciousness, which has you thinking that you've lived and are living a life. Okay, fool me once.
like the sun being enamored by its own reflection.
Okay.
Times a gazillion.
Times a gazillion. A Godzilla-illion. You see, if there's no clinging, if you're not exercising the capacity to attend, then it's okay that capacity is still alive and well, and even kicking. But behind it, or concomitant with it, it's the singularity. And guess what? They occupy the same moment. They occupy the same space. They occupy the same, call it, packets of consciousness, of attention. That's just a little bit paradoxical for a mind that functions on acceptance and refusal, projection and refusal. Because the mind's like, only one thing can be true. Not both things, especially if they appear to be completely opposite of each other. They can't both be true, let alone concomitantly so. I mean, that's just not possible. You're mistaken. So the capacity to attend creates an object field, the imagery of self, and then insists only certain things can be true, not the opposite of those things. Because that's what content does. That's how content feels real.
Yeah, the self-referencing looks at a world.
Bingo.
Self-view.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Right? Yeah. Self-referencing. Yeah. World view, implication, things to like and dislike.
Right.
My reputation, all about me, which is just the impossibility of a Niagara Falls worth of streaming imagery. Now, what happens then if your innate capacity, call it awareness, call it attention, it doesn't need a name because it's not an object and it doesn't belong to you anyway. Wow. I don't have to attend. Which is different, if I dare say, than call it a dearth of objects.
Yeah, I'm thinking of Frosty melted in the greenhouse.
Okay.
And just let him be a puddle.
Okay. But this is. I mean, we're right here. We're right here on a very, very thin line.
There's still an observer there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You see the interface between the singularity and the plurality.
Yeah.
It's so thin,
right.
Because it'll...
A yes, this and a not this is still...
Bam!
A playful endeavor.
Yes, ongoingly. And we're not discouraging or discarding it.
Right. Just noticing that...
Yeah, you're like, I'm always fucked.
In any direction from a self-view...
Yes.
Is reinforcing
a self. Yeah. Before you know it, for a moment it looks like a tree stump that needs to be dug out so that you can get. But then a moment later, it's a 40-foot-long yacht, right? I mean, that's how quickly it goes from, that's quite a tree stump. I'll just start hacking away at this thing so I can get it to float. The next thing you know, you're in a helicopter landing on your 40 foot somewhere out in Seattle with an orca. You know, orcas, like, we love Dave. We love Dave. I mean, that's how prideful we become instantaneously, right? Instantaneously, there's no delay. The train, the distance between the existence station and the pride station, so close, you can walk.
It's the Polar Express, right?
It's the Polar Express, man. Yeah. Uh-huh. It is.
I believe.
That's right. Done. Right? Right? That's how quick. So it's thrilling and sometimes a little disconcerting to see just how quickly you become yourself to your satisfaction or your dissatisfaction. It just doesn't matter. See how quickly you become yourself.
As soon as you open your eyes in the morning.
It could be while you're dreaming. It's just this more subtle, you know.
Maybe.
I don't know.
But that's like you open, for me, I open my eyes in the morning and then it's the initial process of just piecing it all together. Okay, where am I? Who am I? What day is it? And then you get it all pieced together and like, okay, we're going to move out with the plan.
Okay. Yeah.
And if it's right. Slow enough, you can kind of watch it sort of fall into place from nothing to it's Tuesday, got to, you know, work in today, have a 9 o'clock meeting.
Yes.
You know, going to take a walk before whatever.
Yes. So the the time bound aspect of a yogic endeavor is a quality of lighthearted vigilance. To begin to see just how thin you actually are.
Mm-hmm. That you're, what were you before everything fell?
Yes, and that's absolutely included. Yeah. So that's the time-bound invitation of the so-called yoga. Is here's this miraculous quality of attention and self-reflection that you have with at no cost to you. at the cost of everything.
Cost.
Yes, well put. And so you're like, what the fuck am I doing? You know what I mean? What am I made of? How do I function? How does this operate? And then when you start looking at it, you're like, I could never have imagined that this is actually doing what it's actually doing, because I never really took notice of what this is actually doing. I've always just been so proud of being me, I never gave it a second thought.
In a way, that's what we slow it down, and that's what we get together to do, is take another look, like, what is really going on here? Go beyond the just normal day-to-day assumptions on what is this, who are we, what's going on here?
Well, we give it our best shot. Marshmallow treats help.
Organic brown rice
marshmallow. Organic brown rice marshmallow treats. Yes. Our habit, you see, is to go to imagery and content to define ourselves into existence and then to sort out what's bothering us, spiritually or otherwise. So we remain kind of a prisoner to this field of imagery because we've taken ourselves so seriously and existent that now we have to work out what's bothering us in the same context as being. You're fucked because you're still downstream. You're on the plurality side of the event horizon, trying to work out every little fucking thing that, you know, may be bothering you, whether it's your self-esteem or, you know, what you're good at or not good at, or whether, you know, whether your keto is burning the same number of calories it was last week. You know, have I reached a peak on the fat burn? Is this the best I can do? The invitation then is get behind the miraculous capacity to attend. And here it is. Really. If there is realization, let's hope there is, or maybe that there's not, here it is. Because you are, if I dare say, concomitantly a fool of objects and absolutely emancipated from the capacity to attend. Where do you want to spend your time? And that's not up to you either.
That's where I lose a lot of people. When they say there's, oh yeah, well in time we'll get there, and they'll say, you know, we're evolving slowly, or the world is blah, blah, blah. I said, I got news for you. It's instantaneous. Whatever it is, it's instantaneous.
It's always been.
It's like,
isn't it funny? I mean, is your present experience the consequence of having taken time to get here?
And
or is it just a shockwave of ongoing instantaneity? The time-bound aspect of the yoga can make it look like you being inspired, perhaps, to do something about yourself, which may be kind of spiritual. And that's cool. Knock yourself out. Line them up, bowl them down. Line them up, bowl them down. Throw strikes to the grave. Why not? The other, which is the same aspect of the yoga, is not time bound. Its nature is of the instantaneity of experiencing itself. So it doesn't require orientation, integration, maze running, right choices, clever anecdotal phrases.
I'm thinking of the trap the prodigal son fell into. The story of the prodigal son. The one son does everything right, you know. The one who did anything he felt like doing comes back, and they have a big party and goes, that isn't fair. I've been doing everything right. What the hell? What's going on?
Uh-huh.
It's like it just shorts everything out.
Well, yeah.
You know.
Existence, pride.
Yeah. Yeah. And that message basically said presence. Here, now, this. Wow. Just throw a party.
Yeah. And being capable of being so meticulous and therefore doing everything right, if it didn't have its own reward, well.
Right, it wouldn't happen then, right?
Well, then you're in it to have the bigger party. Right? I mean, most lives, you could say, lived, even though they may look like being inspired by the ravages of instant gratification, are really projecting into an imaginary future is what the, you know, so-called ultimate payoff might be. Time, right, creeps in, because in order for the capacity to attend, to create an object, right, there has to be separation, distance from. So the capacity to attend, once it's lit, creates objects. Now you've got two. And that too is both spatial and temporal. Yeah, because now you're in the land of content. You're on the plurality side of the event horizon.
The haves and the have-nots, the just and the unjust.
Everything.
The happy and the sad, the ugly and the pretty.
Everything. Yeah. Right. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Now what does it feel like then if you just baby step back, baby step, very. That's enough. Just
back out.
Now you're behind. You're prior to the capacity to attend. You're not scanning for objects. You're not scanning for experience. You're not scanning to be right about something, wrong about something, better about something. You're released from the inclination / compulsion to put the capacity for attending to use. Don't put it to use.
I'm reminded of the soft focus.
Okay.
You know, with the eyes just slightly open and you're taking in imagery, but you're not focused on anything in particular.
So through the lens of the eyes, that's a fun metaphor. You would come up, I'm sure, with some interesting imagery if you did the same thing with soft ears, soft
exactly,
tongue,
exactly.
Soft smell,
yes.
Soft touch, soft imagination, mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah, from an object attracted to a field of sensory happenings.
Yeah, yes, that's right. See? Yeah, right. It's miraculous. Because it's not just visual. Mm-hmm. It's a gestalt, right? Mm-hmm. It's all, jeez, what?
Symphonic.
Right? Completely symphonic. Mm-hmm. Present experience is like, you know, symphonic. Baton raised high. The whole orchestra is just at it, on it. You know, there's not a, what is it called, forte in the whole, you know, orchestra. It's, I don't know my vernacular very well, but it's, you know, loud as fuck. All the time. Even in the quietest of moments. So this is a shift, because attention is usually compulsed to negotiate with the content that's appearing in attention. You're like, fuck it, man. Don't. Just no. Leave it. To pull back from the inclination / compulsion to attend to the imagery that appears in attention so that you're no longer, I'll use the word for fun, a victim of the capacity to attend. Your intelligence is instantaneous because it's object free.
How many words make it sound complicated?
Yeah.
Can't be.
No, it's not complicated.
It gets complicated when you think you're the center of the universe.
Yes, you're deep in content. Yeah, right. You've already, to be the center of the universe, the capacity to attend is object inebriated. Yeah. Some yogis might say, well, you know, seek for no objects. And I'm just raising the bar a little bit. Release yourself from the capacity to attend. And nothing need change.
That seems a little clearer to me than seek for no objects.
Uh-huh.
I don't really know what that means. Seek for no objects. Well, you're seeking.
Well, you see these images, lovely images of a Buddha, you know, with an acorn hat, right? And I don't know, you know, there's a mudra, you know, and maybe touch the earth or some combination of, you know, mudra and posture, but it's like, right, eyes closed. Right, it's got a certain kind of thing going, and you're like, well, excuse me, Mr. Buddha, are you like without objects, you know? And he's like, no, I'm without the capacity to attend. It's farther back. Yeah,
that's funny because
the emulation might come from reading the Dhammapada and looking at the postures and the mudras and the yantras and the mantras and all that. And then there's that, like you said, behind getting behind the capacity to attend.
Yeah.
And then it's okay or not okay. It's fine or not fine. It's here and it's there and it's all yogic. You know. Try writing on that one.
It's whatever you feel like, right?
Yeah. And I guess that's where Tantra sort of counterbalances the not this, not that. It says yes, this, yes, that.
And, uh-huh.
You know. And then not. Or yes. I know. The self comes back quite vociferously. On its own.
Yeah. Quite on its own.
Quite on its own.
Quite on its own. So it's not a question of focus or choosing or doing or not doing. Because those can only have legs in the imagination of content. You see, if one is feels a certain sense of agency, well, you're already the product of content, of objects, of the capacity to attend, lighting up objects, which anthropomorphizes oneself, reifies oneself, right? So guess what? You don't have any agency. You don't need any agency. Simply behind the capacity to attend, there's no vector of attention because you're not relying upon attention as a co-conspirator to create anything. So on this side of the event horizon, meaning on the singularity side of the event horizon, you got nothing. But there's no lack. The imagination of your life has been a remarkable ruse, but you don't mind.
Like, what have you made for it, of your life? Not a fucking thing.
That's right. What's the password? Not a fucking thing. That's right. The capacity to attend makes it appear as if you've come to a place to have a conversation. You've figured out why you can self-justify leaving the comfort of your home to come to a place to have a conversation because it's working for you or some other bullshit, you know, that you can imagine. But none of that is true. It's not like realization could be realization of something. That's not going to take you all that far. Realization is, you could say, just an awkward word that refers to that which no longer remains once you've been freed from the capacity to attend. But that's a little awkward to say, you know. If you're doling out teachings and you want to put your face on a website and try to make a living, you want to use something like, you know, realization. You don't want to say that which remains after da 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 da, because no one will have any fucking idea what you're talking about, and you won't attract such an abyss. You won't attract any business. I mean, why go to Jeannie Zandi if you're an abyss? What does she have for you? Nothing. What does Adam Chaxfield have for you? Absolutely nothing. But how do they make their money? By riding on the coattails of your having something which is apparently not going your way. I wish I could make a living doing that. Not really, but
yeah.
Fuck it.
Now you would contradict the nature of the night sky. In a sense.
If someone, and many of us are, and we have every right to be, engrossed and immersed and intoxicated by everything about us and the world that's just not right, there's plenty of meetings to go to. Those meetings, most of them are all going to be content dependent. And very few of them, my bias, because I've been to a bunch of them, will not lean into the absence of you. You know, you have to hug a tree and get a reading from a spook, and
it's a lot of dancing around. A
lot of fucking dancing around.
Sacrifice a gerbil, you know.
Sacrifice a gerbil. I like it. Yeah, bring something for the fire. I'll bring the trouble.
Bring some wood.
Oh, man, I'll never get old.
If there's an emphasis, and there needn't be, it would be to sense, feel, see, in whatever way that works, that quality of yourself which is not encumbered by the capacity to attend, that is quite capable of releasing you entirely from getting into a object-laden quagmire. Releases you from the interest or the need to do anything about yourself at all. Where will all the healing take us? Right here. You want to spend a few decades healing? Knock yourself out. Freedom from objects is cool. Freedom from the capacity to attend, it's cooler. Beyond that, I don't know. We'll make up some new fucking words and who knows. what do you do with yourself when you can't find anything convincing?
Get kind of curious about what's going to happen next. The world's not as predictable. And it's a bit more fun. I don't know who's going to call. We think it's really predictable. It appears to be pretty darn predictable, but you really get into this and it's just not very predictable.
It's predictable from a Monday morning quarterback point of view.
Yeah.
You go into the side of the event horizon, the plurality side of the event horizon, and imagination takes hold. Imagery takes hold. Fantasy takes hold. And relying on those impulses, you can make the claim that things are predictable. On the singularity side of the event horizon, well, there are no things. And the notion of them being predictable never even occurs to you. You see, what's next, whether it's what's next in the world or what's next for me, can only occur when you're on the object side of the event horizon. Because there's a sufficient congealing of attention as self that's in friendly anticipation, right, of what's next to do, what's next to feel, what's next to eat, what's next to watch on TV, what's next to avoid.
For
my next event.
Wow.
Wow. Good.
You going to bed or?
No.
Something about your next event.
It's a late night poker party behind the giant. They meet in a van.
Me, the youngest son. Sorry.
Thanks for listening.
Yeah.
How about one for the road?
One what?
What are these? Are they cheese?
I'm going to make it 2. I'll have a second one.
Oh, that's so strange.
They're pretty tasty.
No.
Yum. Oh, I have your stamp.
Oh, yeah.
Let me see that before you give it to her.
There's still, you know why? There's still a little too much earth left because I left it on the computer and it was probably picking up warmth. Oh,
that's
not
it's
much.
It's already warm. It's already shown.
Yeah. Yeah.
My eclipse.
You approve? Is it now a stamp of approval?
Oh, it was on your computer, so it'll stay in the
moment. I think. Either that or, like, I'm so cosmic, my warmth will just stay on the stamp forever.
If I put it in the refrigerator, it'll go off black.
Yeah.
There you go.
That's an interesting story.
That's what happens to bananas, too.
But then they don't revert.
Yeah, then they don't come back. Well, thanks for joining us in your busy social schedule. I hope you make it to your next appointment on time.
I will be late. I have a test.
You talk about the singularity versus the, I'm not going to get the word right, multiplicity, so
yeah,
cavalierly.
Yeah, why not?
I don't know. the shift from those two frames of reference is not something that is all that accessible.
From the plurality side, the singularity side is understandably incomprehensible. And so the time it takes and the luck of the draw and da-da-da-da-da could appear as if, you know, it's insurmountable. Mm-hmm. From the plurality side, there's no question about it. Mm-hmm. But you see, that's contrived. That's why the plurality side is the plurality side. Because it's capable of imagining itself to be other than singular. Yeah, and it does a good job. Yeah, and it does a great job. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, from the singularity side, which is exactly the plurality side. There's no distance. There's no distance, no space, no qualitative anything between the so-called two, which are not two. It's just that the plurality side loves to imagine shit. And so is happy to imagine shit, including just how far away the singularity is. Hmm. Yeah, and so that's, you know, that's right on schedule. So from the singularity side, you could say has made a little bit of progress, maybe a little more than a little bit of progress, piercing the veil of the plurality side. It's like, Jesus Christ, everything's made up on tap. And so it's like, oh, wow, everything really, really, really is just made up on tap. I mean, there is no past, there is no future, there is no life, there's no icons, there's no sentiments, there's no artifacts, there's no proof, there's nothing. And yet the profundity of imagery, making it appear as if objects can be predicted by the likes of me, is fabricated instantaneously.
The parade never stops.
No, nor should it, nor need it. Yeah, hey, it never stops.
You're plugged in, you know?
Yeah, you're plugged in.
That's just the way it is.
That's just the way it is. This thing is right up your sphincter. You can't pull it out. Your hands are tied.
I'm glad they showed it differently in The Matrix.
In The Matrix, a little differently, yeah. Yeah, they forgot to show you the one that, you know, was so far up they had to, like, uncoil it.
Which would bring into question the sun, the moon, and the earth, too.
Absolutely. Everything. It has to bring everything into question.
We were talking about Uranus, though.
Yeah, but we were talking about
so
Uranus. You see how easy it is to become engulfed and absorbed and inebriated by objects. Whether it's a hot pin, a room temperature lead-tipped pencil, or the Pleiades, or beyond. M57 from the galactic Gublablarau, which has a black hole that's a million times bigger than the one at the center of the Milky Way, and... So the plurality is intoxicating. And there's no way that the plurality... Though it may entertain the singularity, it can't wrap its hands around the singularity because nobody can do that. Nothing can do that.
Well, they're not two sides of the same coin, right? I mean,
they're the same exact thing. Exactly the same. Really, I mean, really, strangely, exactly the same. The singularity dreams.
It's like the rainbow.
All right.
Okay. The singularity dreams.
Does a rainbow exist?
Right.
Where'd it go?
Okay. The other difficulty is imagining that what we're referring to as the singularity is anything. A state, you know, samadhi, spiritual progress. It's not. Therefore, it's much closer than we dare imagine.
Vacuity. It's a space that everything comes...
Okay. Well, absolutely. Yeah.
In.
Vacuity's sweet. Yeah. Vacuity in that sense is... It's not that vacuity is a thing or even has a boundary. Vacuity implies bright potential or the spaceless space in which the plurality of ideation occurs. But even then, it gets right very thinly objectified.
Yeah, then everything would be in.
Yeah,
everything
well.
Would be out.
Yeah. See, boundaries are really strange.
Right.
In, out, up, down, before and after. It can't make any sense. I mean, the plurality side insists that these kinds of boundary conditions are actually binding, that they mean something, and that the absence of them would be wrong. Wrong according to physics, wrong according to Einstein, wrong according to Niels Bohr, wrong according to the Aborigines, you know, right and wrong according to whomever, right and wrong according to whomever. You're fucked. Right presently, you simply rest. You get behind the capacity to attend. Now you're no longer content dependent. This is not something that's going to make sense to mind as a, right? Mind as a, call it, you know, the functioning of units of measure of symbology. Right? It's not going to make sense to that. Because it's beyond or prior to the imposition or the occurrence of symbology. And it has no implication. So can you feel right in your nature and in anyone's nature, you can feel the I'm applying myself. All right. I wish to apply myself, whether it's I want to figure it out or I want to feel it or I want it to this or that. Right. There's the energy of applying myself. Yes. Get behind that. Stop. Stop applying yourself. Right. See,
I fall asleep and then I wake up.
OK, that's right. I'm doing the same. While you're asleep, I'm talking, and while you're awake, I'm still talking. But I'm asleep, I'm actually asleep.
I remember that word, actual, self-actualize.
Yes.
And
yeah, it's too thick.
Yeah, it would appear to be too thick.
God.
It would appear to be too thick.
Way thick.
Well, what's interesting, what intrigued me about it was this momentum or movement, this awareness way of being, didn't depend on the outer world's approval,
no
motivation, acceptance or rejection. It just bubbled forth, and then it was expanded into, well, gosh, this exists independent of accolades and reinforcement.
Yes,
you know, to various degrees, then it must exist. Period.
Yeah,
unencumbered by all the biases of human crawling existence.
Yeah.
I say crawling in a sense that sometimes it feels like we're all crawling.
Well, yeah, pretty much.
Clawing and crawling.
Clawing and crawling. Yeah. That's right. Resourceful maggots.
And to be like self-actualized in a sense is getting behind it in a way. It's getting behind. What did you call it again?
Capacity to attend.
Capacity to attend.
So you see, the capacity to attend, if one is exercising it or using it, it insists on resolution. The capacity to attend, its job is to create, find objects. The object of understanding, right? Understanding is an object. Because understanding then is something that's right or wrong or higher or lower or better or worse, or by compared to not understanding, it is something, but this is not anything. So you can't use the capacity to attend to therefore create an object field that is ultimately satisfying. So that's why you have no choice, none of us do, no choice but to just step back behind the capacity to attend.
Is that why it seems like dissatisfaction is a little closer?
Sure.
Than satisfaction. Because satisfaction says, yes, of course. And dissatisfaction questions.
Yeah, yeah.
hey, maybe this is a setup. And it has no end.
That's right.
The carrot is always 3 inches.
Yeah.
And you're running your ass off trying to get it.
Okay. Right. Trying to convert dissatisfaction into satisfaction, you're going the wrong way.
Right.
You want to convert dissatisfaction into obliteration.
Yeah. So then dissatisfaction is a state that can cultivate standing behind the capacity.
Let's hope so.
Non-satisfaction rather than dissatisfaction.
Wait a minute. Non-satisfaction.
Well, I'm just dissatisfaction. It's just like
removed
on the negative side. It's just like,
Yeah.
It's still an attitude. It's still a
belief
system and all that jazz.
But something motivates us to come back to this conversation. And I will confess.
I don't know if it's a thing.
I will confess. Whatever
all right.
It is,
True confessions.
I will call it my own, and I will call it a dissatisfaction.
Okay.
Of this self that's constantly fussing about being in the basement on a sunny day.
Yeah.
You know.
Sure.
I just wrote a poem about it, by the way.
There you go.
But so. It's like, and then, I don't know. And then it's just perfectly fine. Without having changed anything.
We can report, poetically or otherwise, on what we imagine our life experience has been prior to now. And that's great. I mean, Walt Whitman did a fantastic job.
Yeah, right? I have a predisposition to do that on occasion.
You're not alone?
Yeah.
This arising that you are, this irrefutability that you are, this comes about with no choice, no preference, no approval on your part. Oh, shit. Just like that.
You can't stop it.
No. And let's say its most evocative capacity is to put the capacity to attend to use. Really, because everything, joy or sorrow, is, you're right, outgassing of the capacity to attend, the capacity to feel, the capacity to live this. Right?
We love it.
For good reason. Absolutely.
Being alive.
Yes. Yes.
Hello.
Right. We wouldn't trade it.
So when that compulsion to some form of bias compels us to be in a location and it relaxes, something bigger seems to happen in the sense of...
Let's hope so.
In the sense of... Yeah. Can't really say much more about it.
No. Well, a ton of things, but...
Because it's constantly changing. It could be this and it could be this.
Yes.
It could be... local, very local, and it could be just absent of
any
self-reference.
And is any and all of those without quarrel all
without
the time?
Quarrel.
Any and all of those without quarrel concomitantly at the same so-called time.
Yeah.
The capacity to imagine that something is at the expense of it not being is imagined. So you see what happens to the quality of this aliveness, this irrefutability, if it's no longer beleaguered by the compulsion to attend and then create imaginary boundary fields and market analyses. It's free of that. It's free not just of objects and subjectivity. It's free of the capacity to attend. So it's completely prior to the presumption of existence. And yet this irrefutability has not gone anywhere. Nothing's happened to it. Right? But the can we call it the phase wave of association? Is relaxed. There's no longer a phase wave of association. So exactly this, which loves to live in the way that it does, you could say has a whole new realm of enjoyables. that are completely non-objective.
Even though it's not a place that's being described, it seems to be a state within presence that's always there, always here. I know, it's getting thick already. But and how could it not be described in such a way, locally, as getting behind and then something happening a little different?
Yeah.
Because you get behind it.
Yeah, yeah.
Yet there is this sense of yes to that.
Uh-huh. Yeah. That's as far as you can go.
Right.
Right? Yeah. If one can one can enjoy that yes. Like we were talking, I don't know, the other week, you know, the big okay, right? The really big okay, which is another way of going, yes. Because you're toast, right? This has outmatched you. So it's like, okay, yes.
It really is about all you can do.
Yeah. You can bring yourself like a horse to water. You can come to the pond.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Then, you know, this finishes you off. This finishes the job. Isn't it interesting that a capacity to feel and speak in the way that we do and put these curious, you know, nonsensical phases into some kind of, you know, enjoyable or playful perspective is happening of its own accord. But you can sense it, right? There's a certain kind of sensing. There's a certain kind of intelligence that's like, you know, lit and pulsing and is capable of seeing and feeling itself prior to the capacity to attend. The miracle of one's sensuality, the miracle of one's enjoyment of living, is appearing in that. If we become too local, which is not a crime, happens all the time, if we become too local, then, right, the inertia of imagination and objects and stories, well, they come on so fast and so strong that, you know, you're back on your yacht with the orcas and the dolphins, you know, singing your praises.